about. So with that, I'm going to turn you over to the corridor. Everyone have a safe weekend. And like I said, if you're able, please join us at the wedding show at St. Lawrence College on Sunday.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the new name for Kingston's Museum of Healthcare.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
The Museum of Healthcare is entering a new chapter, announcing it will now be known as the Canadian Museum of Healthcare, a name change that reflects the museum's growth and an expanding vision for its future. Located in the Ann Bailey Building on the Kingston General Hospital site, the museum explores the history of healthcare from the 18th century to the modern era. While rooted in Kingston, its exhibits already tell stories from across the country, highlighting key developments in national medical history. Anna Collette, Programming and Communications Coordinator with the Canadian Museum of Healthcare, spoke to the decision to change the name.
This has been a long time coming because our collection is actually quite national. We have over 35,000 artifacts in our collection, and it's the largest collection of medical artifacts in Canada. So we thought it was a great time to, with the new year, to start aligning ourselves with our collection and our actual outreach.
Collette says visitors shouldn't expect a dramatic shift in the museum's direction. The gallery already features artifacts and stories from across Canada, tracing the progress of healthcare nationally, also making the new name a more accurate reflection of what the museum already offers. Collette shared some of the museum's current offerings.
So with our national collection, we can certainly reach within our own collection as well. One example I can think of is a pair of dentures that was made by a man in British Columbia, and he didn't want to pay for his dentures, so he actually went and shot a deer and filed down the teeth to make a pair of deer teeth dentures. And that's another interesting artifact we have that's from British Columbia. One exhibit we have focuses on vaccination and immunization, so it takes quite a large scope because it looks at cases of different diseases like polio, diphtheria, and smallpox, and how that has changed since vaccination programs have been introduced. So it takes quite a large scope, and we have an artifact called the Iron Lung, which was built in Toronto, and it's quite the star artifact at the museum. It was used for children who had polio who couldn't breathe on their own. It's from the 1930s before a vaccination was introduced, so it really shows a time before vaccines.
Looking ahead, the Canadian Museum of Healthcare will continue the work it has always done, all while embracing new opportunities to tell an even broader range of stories from Canada's healthcare past.
So we're hoping it brings a bit more attention to healthcare history and also our role in Kingston and reaching even further to national scope. So starting in Kingston, we've always been deeply rooted in Kingston, but hoping to branch out a little bit. The Canadian Museum of Healthcare is open Wednesday to Friday, 10 to 4 during the winter. And starting in June, we're open every day from 10 to 4. And students with their IDs, admission is $5.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, that covers TLTI's $196,000 casino payout.
Thank you, Jesse. A third quarter casino revenue payment will deliver nearly $197,000 to each of Gananoque and the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands, providing a welcome but increasingly scrutinized source of municipal funding as local casino revenues continue to decline from past highs. The Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation announced it is issuing a $196,783 payment to each municipality for the period from October 1st to December 31st, tied to the operation of Shorelights Casino Thousand Islands. So far in OLG's 2025-26 fiscal year running April 1st to March 31st, Gananoque and TLTI have each received $688,188. Since the casino opened in June 2022, cumulative payments to each community now total over $34 million. The payments are made under OLG's Municipality Contribution Agreement, which applies a standardized province-wide formula based on a graduated scale of gaming revenue generated at each land-based casino site. While the latest payment reinforces the long-standing financial relationship between the casino and its host municipalities, it also comes amidst a clear downward trend in annual casino revenue flowing to Gananoque and TLTI. In the 2024-25 fiscal year, both municipalities received roughly $938,000 each from Shorelines Casino Thousand Islands, representing an approximately 18% drop, or more than $200,000 compared to the previous year. The decline is part of a longer-term pattern that has seen payments fall from more than $1.8 million annually in the early 2010s to current levels. Province-wide host communities have received nearly $2.4 billion in non-tax gaming revenue since 1994. OLG says it remains committed to reinvesting 100% of its profits back into Ontario communities with casino operations supporting economic development, infrastructure, investment, and job creation. Over the past 9 years, gaming service providers have invested more than $2.9 billion in private sector capital across Ontario, leading to the opening of 7 new casinos, 2 large-scale resorts, developments and expansions, and numerous gaming floor and non-gaming and amenity upgrades. For Gananoque and TLTI, however, the latest quarterly payment underscores a financial reality that is increasingly shaping budget discussions. While casino revenue remains valuable, it can no longer be relied upon as the steady growing source of funding it once was. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJI reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about a new workshop series for young entrepreneurs in Kingston.
Thank you, Dinah. The Kingston Economic Development Corporation has partnered with their counterparts in London, Ontario, to give local aspiring food entrepreneurs access to a workshop series tailored to starting and expanding food manufacturing and packaging businesses. The Foodpreneur Advantage program is a 6-part virtual workshop that is designed with the unique challenges of starting and maintaining a food manufacturing business in mind. The program continues to be run by London's Small Business Enterprise Center, with Kingston participants tuning into sessions that kicked off earlier in the month, running each Thursday morning on a weekly basis until mid-February. Business Development Manager of Small and Medium Enterprises, Rob Tamblin, said starting a more accessible Kingston-based program to learn about consumer packaged goods was considered following consultations during COVID, but ultimately the existing program in London made sense to join on to. With Kingston believed to have one of the higher numbers of restaurants per capita in Ontario, Tamblin says it makes sense for there to be a local interest in a less localized revenue stream. With the first session kicking off on Thursday, January 15th, Tamblin said 17 people or businesses in the Kingston area had registered for this initial workshop. Subsequent one-hour sessions will continue weekly until February 19th, exploring topics including food safety, packaging and labeling, and marketing food products. Info on specific sessions and how to register can be found on the Development Corporation's website.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about a boundary review in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Council voted 4-3 to table further discussion until 2027 on a ward boundary review. This decision came after the Ontario Land Tribunal repealed a previous ward reconfiguration bylaw from May of 2025. At that time, Council passed a bylaw to establish a new ward boundary configuration. A notice of appeal was filed with the Ontario Land Tribunal in October of 2025, and on December 18th, the Tribunal issued an order that repealed that bylaw. This means there are no changes to the existing council composition and ward boundaries for the 2026 municipal election. At their latest meeting, staff originally recommended receiving the report and increasing the review budget by $40,000. Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend added an amendment that would see further discussion left until 2027. Townend spoke about the need for adding the amendment and why he supported it.
My intent with the amendment is it doesn't, you know, if we just take the motion as it stands today, you know, there's essentially nothing. We're agnostic about any future process. What this does is it ensures that whether the next council wants to do a ward boundary review or not, that it comes to that council for sure to be dealt with. It provides some degree of certainty for those who, you know, who might be upset with the fact that we are status quo for 2026. You know, this will be dealt with in the next term of council.
Councillor Jake Ennis opposed the amendment.
I'm not going to be supporting the amendment or the original motion. My view is that we should finish the ward review that we started, and we should finish it as soon as possible. We should not stop or cancel the ward review before it's finished. The ward review will be finished when a change to the status quo is passed and it is not appealed or it survives an appeal. That's when the ward review will be over. So essentially, if this amendment passes, it's going to shut down the debate a bit. The township's own, our own expert Watson consultants found that the status quo wards to be problematic. And that they do not ensure effective representation. All citizens have the right to effective representation in government. This is a democratic right enshrined in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Ennis spoke about a previous option, which he still supports.
The OLT has taken one of the final options proposed by our Watson consultants, one of the final options for change off the table, but there was a second final option. And the OLT did also conclude that final option two was reasonable. So in my view, I would like to see, and it doesn't cost taxpayers any more money, that staff bring forward final option two to council for consideration for adoption at a future meeting. The need for change to the wards hasn't changed. The reasons we undertook the ward review haven't changed. If anything, it's become more imperative to finish the ward review and be clear with the public. We should finish the ward review that we started. We should not delay it to a future council, and we should finish it as soon as possible.
Councillor Lorna Willis pointed out the cost of the last appeal.
If there's an appeal, the last one cost $53,000. So any new decision could likely be appealed and could likely cost that $53,000 again or more.
Councillor Paul Proderick noted the money the township had already spent on the review.
Having been to all the town halls and numerous events, and I don't hear in the community right now anyways a big urge to move ahead with anything right now. And I'm looking at, if I read the report correctly, spent almost $125,000 on this, and I don't think at this time anything more than receiving the report is appropriate.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn spoke about the upcoming election and additional staffing costs.
Anything more than this during an election year, I think, is just going to be extremely confusing. It's going to muddy the waters, and I always like to see a healthy lineup of candidates, and I believe that the confusion alone may deter some from actually putting their name forward. I'm even more concerned that the electorate will have concerns and be confused during the election, because we're going to finish a review. We'll come up with a response or a bylaw. It may be amended, or sorry, it may be appealed. So just that significant confusion in the length of 10 months, I think is just, for one thing, I don't think it's fair to the electorate that they would have to figure out in October what they're actually voting on. The other thing is, you know, related to cost, staff are already going to be already are working on an election. The staff that are working on the election would be the ones that would be administering the review and bringing it back to council. So they can only work on one thing at a time. So in all reality, we probably would have to bring in an external source to be able to assist council through the remainder of this process. That is an additional cost. It's not in the budget. It would be over and above the budget that the taxpayers would be absorbing.
Council passed the motion with the amendment in a close 4-3 vote. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about adaptive mobility technology in Prince Edward County.
Electric vehicles of all types are on the market, and we see a variety of them scooting around town. The Community Care for Seniors Center in Picton hosts a webinar this past week that was presented by Lisa LaPierre from the Ontario Ministry of Transport in Kingston, featuring everything you need to know about e-scooters. Participants could watch in person at the center or watch from the comfort of their home online. I decided to go to the center to meet seniors and talk to them firsthand and learn details about e-scooters for my own interest. Bill and Isla were two people who came to the presentation, and both were more than happy to chat about electric vehicles as well as their thoughts about the future should they not be able to drive. Bill and Isla chat with me before the presentation. Bill, what brought you here today? Are you interested in e-scooters, or what brought you here today?
Just preparing for when I'm older, my dear, for mobility.
Meaning
if I ever come to the age where I lose my driver's license, I want something to be able to get around.
And you think a scooter will do that?
A scooter or one of them cars that I see.
Yeah, right. That's good, Lisa.
Right. There's a number of different vehicles out
right,
there.
Right, yeah, exactly.
A lot of people are using.
Yeah.
How about you, Isla? What brought you here today?
That's the same as I am. Right now I'm still able to drive, but who knows how long something could happen. And I'm really more interested in the little cars, you know. I'd like to get up there and go in my little car.
Me as well.
I haven't seen too many around in Picton, have you?
No, just in Belleville. I've seen one or two in Picton.
I did too.
Yeah.
And I did see one. I was in the mall in Kingston with my daughter, and we passed a little store, and there was a little car sitting there. But she was kind of in a hurry, so I would have liked to stop and had a look in that little thing, but she was in a hurry. So.
In the chat, I sit in them. You know, I check them every time I go to Belleville.
How much did they cost?
Around $10,000 was the last figure I had seen.
Yeah,
around
I think so.
But it includes everything.
So now will you be showing those today?
I don't know what they're showing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, and we can ask questions. We watched the presentation together where we learned about e-scooters and several other electric vehicles, the laws set by the Ontario Ministry of Transport, safety requirements, where they can be used, batteries, and what types of vehicles are not legal. Bill and Isla were interested in the low-speed small cars, so we were able to ask questions about those vehicles.
I think the people in the room were interested in the small cars. And I think you've made it clear that you don't have information about that because the ministry is working with that. Do you have any idea when there will be some information about these small cars?
No, the information that we have as of right now is that there are rules for those small devices, the small car devices. And it really comes down to the officers to enforce the law on them. So they do consult with us to know, because there's new stuff coming out every month. And so it's hard for officers often to determine if they are legal or not, and what's a mobility device and what's not. So it's up to them to enforce it. but those gray areas really, like, we make policies and we do pilot projects and stuff like that, but we don't do the enforcement. What's important for the community to know is that if a senior is considering purchasing one of these, you need to go on our MTA website on low-speed vehicles and look at what the qualification of those are. And if you go to a person who's selling them and these things are not on the device, then they are not a legal device. And so please do not purchase them. If you have questions, you can always send me some questions and I can help, give you those details if you can't find them. But that's where it's really important, because a lot of people will sell these to seniors. And then they'll leave the city very quickly because they don't want to have, because what's going to happen is the police is going to stop them, tell them they can't use it, then they're going to go back to this company and they don't want to have to do refunds, right? So they come in towns and they leave very quickly. So it's really important to protect ourselves and to make sure that they have the right requirements.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was interesting. At least we found out something.
That's right.
We'll
run
out and buy one when we...
No, we won't do that. I'm too young yet anyway.
Oh, yes.
But I guess, you know what, it wouldn't matter what age you were, if something happened.
Oh, yeah. We're trying to prepare for ourselves.
Yeah. All right.
Although Bill and Isla were disappointed that the low-speed vehicles were not covered in the presentation, they were happy to come to the center and then join the bridge games afterwards. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about junior hockey in Northumberland County.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones, reporting for CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. The owner of the Northumberland Stars junior hockey team operating out of Colburn says he wants to increase community outreach and engagement. Alex McConnell and business partner Bill Dyer purchased the team in April, leading the club to the top of the Greater Metro Junior Hockey League standings. McConnell says creating a stronger bond in Cramie Township will be beneficial to the team.
Northumberland Stars is a junior hockey team with players aged between 16 and 21. There's no import restrictions as well, so we've got players from Sweden, Russia, Belgium, the States, Canada, obviously, with a good group of local guys as well. It's exciting junior hockey with no restrictions, really.
And why Colburn?
Glenn Campbell had the team in Colburn now, before we purchased the team in April. But Colburn, I think, is a great spot where, you know, you get the small town junior hockey feel. It's a strong community, a lot of good local businesses and great people in the area. So I think, once we get the team established and have the community involved, I think that there's a lot of potential for it to be, you know, a big piece of Colburn for sure.
So then how does the GMHL differ from other junior hockey leagues in the area?
So, I mean, just with the kind of the closest local teams like the Port Hope Panthers, Colburn Cougars, or the Trenton Golden Hawks, they're restricted on the imports. So they're basically Canadian and American players. The Junior C team in Port Hope, they're allowed the extra overage year with the 21-year-olds, which is similar to us. We're an unsanctioned league, so there's no connection to Hockey Canada. So basically, it's a open borders. There's no restrictions on the imports. There's a limit on the 21-year-olds. We're able to have two guys that have played the previous year and then five new ones, which is up for potential debate, but that's how the rule is currently. And then 16-year-olds, you're allowed as many. Well, there's no limit on that. So gives the young guys a good opportunity to get in and not be kind of, handcuffed with only one spot or two spots available. We've had a couple of good 16-year-olds over the last few years as well. So
how do you describe the play of your team?
The play of our team this season, I think we're definitely a skilled team, but we're very hardworking. It starts kind of from the top of our lineup down. We've got a lot of experienced guys with a lot of junior games that potentially going to be going and playing at college or university next year. But yeah, I'd say we're an exciting team. We're high scoring. We've been leading the league in goals for, leading the league in goals or in goals against as well. So it's tight defensively, but definitely a good offensive punch as well, which generally makes for an exciting game. But yes, it's a really good group of guys this year for sure.
So Lynn, if I buy a ticket, so for my family and I, we buy tickets. What's the experience going to be like?
I think, ticket prices are great. It's only $5, so it's we've kept it low, so it's cost affordable. We'd just like to kind of see the community out and get involved. But I think what you could expect coming out to a game would be, you know, a fast-paced, exciting, probably high-scoring game, and obviously a Stars win as well.
I know that your organization presented to Cranby Council recently, and there was discussion about struggling to get sponsors. Are you attributing that to possible economic conditions in the community, outreach? What seems to be the issue there?
I think it would probably be exposure and just kind of community involvement. I don't think, you know, as a team, there's been a ton of community involvement in the last couple of seasons. So that's definitely something that we've focused on, working closely with Chris Kerwin at the Keeler Center and getting involved and trying to establish those connections and relationships within the community is definitely something that we'd love to do, something that we look forward to doing, and a goal of ours for sure. So we want to give back and do as much as we can locally, and hopefully, you know, in return, we'll see that reciprocated. But yeah, I mean, the guys, majority of the guys are billeting. We do have about probably 10 local guys as well. So everybody's right here. We've got half of the guys basically living right in Colburn as well. So, you know, they're excited and hoping to get involved, whether it's with minor hockey, the local schooling system. We were involved in the Santa Claus parade this year. Anything really to get out and get involved, the boys are happy to do it. And it's definitely a goal of ours for sure.
So then what do you see the future of the Northumberland Stars in Colburn and the community itself?
I think with the progression we've made this year and some of the relationships we've already built, I think we're definitely off to a great start. You know, I think being involved over the summer as well in just local fundraisers, maybe hosting some of our own like baseball tournaments, road hockey tournaments, that type of thing, just showing that, you know, we do want to give back. We do want to get involved. I think it's the potential in Colburn. Obviously, it's a small community, but I think it's a very tight-knit, good, welcoming community as well. So I think, you know, once we get established and really show that we're for real and that we care and that we're putting a valuable product on the ice as well, and you know, they're more to just the team than the game as well, getting involved and helping with the youth and giving back to minor hockey and whatnot as well. I think there's a ton of potential, and it's what's kept us in Colburn for sure.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up on the corridor, supported by local realtor Kim Purcell at kimpurcell.ca, is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, January 29th, bitterly cold here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of minus 14. We'll actually feel a little closer to minus 12 in the sun, but we do have the possibility of some isolated flurries in the afternoon. Friday, January 30th, daytime high of minus 11, feeling closer to minus 20. More snow in the forecast, not a ton of accumulation, but we will have snow falling on the 30th of January. Saturday, January 31st, daytime high of minus 10, feeling closer to minus 12. Otherwise, it is sunny. And we get our first single-digit negative temperature day coming up on Sunday, February 1st. Daytime high of minus 7, only going to feel like minus 9. Practically balmy compared to everything that came before it. And then Monday, February 2nd, daytime high of -5, overnight low of -11, with a little bit of snow forecasted for the afternoon.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Plugged in My Ears podcast. Today you're joined by Adam, who's here with the best student play-by-play announcer in the world, as awarded by the International Student Broadcasting Championship, Zayden Vergara. Welcome back to the show. You're kind of a reoccurring character. Every couple episodes, Zayden's around here. But we are lucky to have him here because he is the best student play-by-play announcer in the world, all right? And we also are joined by another guest, Richmond Green Student Athlete of the Year, Women's Tara Tamang.
Circa 2021.
Yes, circa 2021. So she's a bit washed, but that's okay. That's okay. If you've seen her play Ultimate Frisbee, you know what I'm talking about.
That's mean.
It's factual.
All right. I think that'll be all from Tara for this episode, but we are no, I'm just joking. We've got a lot to talk about today. There was a good chunk of stuff that happened over the past week. We got some hockey rumors. There's some trade rumors coming up. We've got the NFC and AFC championship games to go over. We got to talk about Marner and his return to Toronto, because that was a really big night for him, and big night for the Golden Knights. But first, Zayden, just what have you been up to, man? I feel like it's been a while. Like give me the rundown. What's been going on?
Not too much. I've tried to keep busy. Doing some broadcasting work with the Frontenacs. Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
That was a glorious introduction. I think we need to get you a job with the Frontenacs. Announce when the players come on.
Hey, man, I'll take that job any day of the week.
But yeah, really happy to be here. Been doing a bit of traveling, trying to go and keep up with the sports world and see what's really going on.
Nice, man. Nice. That's awesome. So you said you were doing some color for the Frontenacs. That's an awesome deal. You doing like halftime, or not halftime, intermissions, or are you doing like actual in the booth play-by-play commentary?
Anytime you have broadcasting, you got the play-by-play responsibilities and color. Mm-hmm. Previously, my specialization has always been in play-by-play. Right. I developed that from a young age when I went to all my older brothers and my cousins' hockey games. And to be honest, I found it boring at first. And then watching the Leafs play and hearing the calls from Joe Bowen, I used to go and go like, okay, so that's how you do it. And I always admired how Joe Bowen would always go and keep you glued to your TV screen. Mm-hmm. And then I found myself, when I was going to all these hockey games, I was starting to go in my head, just commentate and think about what would it sound like, as I'm sure many kids did.
Absolutely.
And then it came to CFRC here and continue that. And then that progressed on to working with Your TV and Coachico. I was interviewing players, trying to get behind a scenes look, doing some desk hosting with them. And then opportunity came knocking where it was in the dead of winter and in December. And they needed an extra fill on Friday in the color slot. And so I started brushing up on all my color knowledge. And one of the best parts about broadcasting and doing some solo broadcasting is that you sort of need to know all the stats going into it. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a play-by-play or a color commentator, you have to go and know how to bring that game to life. Yeah. And I was really, really fortunate that my co-commentator, Ellen Itramansky, did a great job of making sure that I was well supported throughout, and I had a blast during the game.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was going to ask you, so your partner's Ellen, and they're really good, really helpful.
Yeah. Alan's great.
Oh, Alan. Yeah. Okay.
Alan's amazing, and you'll be happy to know he is a Habs fan. It's his worst quality.
Oh, that sounds like a great quality to me.
Yeah, it's just anytime I'm on air with them, I'm like, oh, geez, this is just. It's just brutal talking to a Habs fan on air. I'm sure you know about that, but looking forward to all the opportunities that I'm looking to progress into in sports broadcasting, and it's an amazing community to be a part of.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. Congratulations. Really, really, really excited for you. I know you've got what it takes to do it, clearly, because you were the best student play-by-play announcer in the world. So I think you're going to crush it no matter where you're at, but that's great that you found some opportunities with the Frontenacs. I'll ask you a few Frontenacs questions because, I mean, this... You might know more than I as an insider now, but they traded a few of their top-notch players.
Yes.
And I understand it, right, because now, correct me if I'm wrong, they were overagers. Jacob Battaglia is who I'm talking about, and Tyler Hopkins. I believe they traded both of those.
Both
NHL prospects, both Battaglia, the captain, former captain of the Kingston Frontenacs. They got a boatload of stuff in return, but what are the vibes like at these Frontenacs games? I haven't been out to one in a while. Like, are there a lot of younger guys stepping up? Like, I know that Van Williamson was announced the new captain, so is he stepping into that role well? Like, what's the overall vibe with the team right now? Because it almost seems like they were in like a selling state by getting rid of these top players.
So there's been a question to catch you up to speed on the Frontenacs. There's a question going into this season, and especially towards the trade deadline, of what's going on with the Frontenacs. Are they selling? Are they making a push? Mm-hmm. They had the tools if they went out and tried to make a push, but it'd be a final hurrah, like you said, with the overagers, because they are no longer eligible next year.
Right.
Hopkins, Battaglia, I've had the chance to chat with both of them. They are incredible players, and the mind, the way they see the ice, and as I've talked with you when we go to those games, is completely different. They scan the ice and they know exactly how to perform.
Absolutely.
So them departing is rough. I think that the return of Battaglia was good. I would have liked to see picks are amazing, and mm-hmm. believe me, having the actual in-person selection happening in Kingston this year is going to be really cool.
Yeah.
I'm of the mindset that a pick is great, but you sometimes want to make sure you get a player.
Right.
So there's a few players around the league. Oh, that's an aspiring prospect. But now you have those bargaining chips inside in the form of picks that they're able to go and use. So I very much like the trade for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to see them make a push personally, but that's just not the reality. The vibes going on though, is opportunity is knocking. Mm-hmm. The best part about the OHL is that whether your team's in it or not even remotely close, every player there has scouts coming out to the games. You have eyes on you if you're making these crazy plays. Just because your team is no longer in a winning state, you're still probably going to make it to the first round of playoffs. You need to keep playing. You need to keep showing up. Because if you get down after losing some teammates and let that bring you down, even if it's a captain, mm-hmm. you got to know how to pick yourself up. And I think it's a great learning opportunity for them. And I know the vibes will be weird for the first few games, but now you're going to get new guys that step up and those new bonds that start to form that everyone in the community is going to love.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. That's kind of what I thought the vibes were behind, like, well, or not maybe the vibes, but the thoughts behind the trades were that the Frontenacs were kind of off to a slower start. Like, they were around 500, a little bit below. But now they seem to be on quite a little bit of a run recently. I've been paying attention to their Instagram. I think they've won a good amount of games in the last 10 games or so. I think they've won like eight or nine out of those 10. So maybe these this change was exactly what they needed, right? And like you said, only what, two or three teams miss the playoffs in the OHL, so you're going to get a first round for the most part because there are worse teams out there. But I do think it's still exciting to be in the building for those. I'm going to have to get out to a few more games before the semester's up. Hopefully, maybe a deep playoff run. You never know, right? It is the OHL.
Anything can happen. Team gets hot at the right point. And the one thing the Frontenacs 100% have this year's goaltenders.
Oh, yeah. Betts and
Minchak.
Yeah. Both of them are solid goalies. Yeah.
I've seen them and chatted with both of them. Like, I think I've told you this. My favorite players to interview are the goalies. They have such a personality, I find. And if you can pick into that personality, there's just so much life that comes out of it. Yeah. I know a lot of people say, like, oh, you have these backbones of a team. The goalie's the backbone of the team. And if you have a goalie that's a character, it gets everyone going. Mm-hmm. Marc-Andre Fleury, my favorite goalie of all time, personally, just because I see how much of a character he is. And you know that in that locker room, no matter what's going on, that has the type of ability to go and bring every player together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, goaltending is huge. But we do wish Tyler Hopkins and Jacob Bataglia the best on their new teams. I know Jacob Bataglia, he went to Flint Firebirds. So that's a great franchise. So I think
should make a run.
That'll be really good for him. And where did Hopkins end up getting traded to, if you know off the top of your head? No worries if not. I just know that as a Hopkins is a Leafs prospect.
Yes.
Right. So I know that was a big one for them to lose. But I do think this also gives guys another chance to step up, as you said. It looks like Tyler Hopkins was traded to the Guelph Storm.
Guelph Storm, that's so, what it was. I knew it was around there.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go and misquote it.
Absolutely, yeah. No. So it does look like, and he's doing pretty well. 8 points in 10 games. It's a good start.
He's a great player, great mindset. Calgary Flames is the team for Jacob Bataglia, mm-hmm. and I think both of them should get some reps in, especially next year, and they deserve to, because both those players, they've proven it through the time with the Frontenacs that they're able to go and get that job done, and if you put them into the right system, they will deliver, and that's the important part.
Absolutely. But it is definitely a new era in Kingston, so it's really exciting. A lot of new players on the horizon. Okay, we're going to switch over to an old player visiting an old team and with his new team, and that's Mitch Marner, who was back in Toronto for his first game against the Maple Leafs as a member of the Vegas Golden Knights. And Zayden, you were there. You saw it. What was the environment like? Because I saw some pretty nasty posters, I'm not going to lie. I think there was one that was a jersey that said sellout or something on the back of it, and Kolesar knocked it down before he came out onto the ice or something like that. But apparently the vibes were immaculate.
There was a lot of those. I was at the game, like you said. It was an incredible opportunity to be able to go. I loved Marner when he was playing for Toronto. Mm-hmm. I think he's a good kid that has the ability to do a lot. I think... I do think that there's a little bit to be said about negotiations and understanding, even if you're playing for your home team, how negotiations are supposed to look, whether you're a superstar or not. And I think that there's a lot to be learned from both sides of the bargaining table of how you need to progress with your contract negotiations going forward, mm-hmm. Especially in a market that is Toronto, where you're playing the biggest hockey market. There's a little bit of understanding that you're playing for the name there too.
Absolutely.
Rightfully so. But even when I got there, the amount of Marner jerseys was crazy, and it was a really mixed reaction. Like, whenever he touched the puck, the boos were mad, were booming, especially mm-hmm. there. The microphones, like, watched the clips, did not even barely capture it. But during the welcome back video, that one was conflicted, as was shown, and I was conflicted, where I'm like, there's some people around me booing, and I'm like, I'm not standing up, but I'm gonna clap.
Yeah.
Because I do recognize that I was cheering for this guy. He's a good Canadian kid from his hometown, and he didn't leave under the best circumstances, and I think that's something we can all relate to, of wanting to leave a hometown or leave something that you started in a good way, but that's not possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just want to salvage what's there, and he did a good job while he was here.
Mm-hmm.
He did a really good regular season job.
Yes, he did. Yep. No, 9 great regular seasons.
He's exactly who you want to employ. Like, he shows up for those 40 hours, but never ask him to come in for on a Saturday, because once you have to do a little bit more and go into the playoffs, oh, no, that's not in the contract.
Yeah, no, it definitely, I was talking talking about this with some of my housemates before, but the fact that if maybe he didn't go to Vegas, if he went to almost any other team, maybe not Florida, but if he went to any other team, I feel like the reception would have been a little bit better. I think Vegas and Florida very much are the villains of the NHL, and Marner going to Vegas, I think, was just a bigger slap in the face than maybe him going to any other team.
No, it was him saying no. What did it for me, Adam, is him saying no to the potential trade that would have gotten us Rantanen.
Yeah.
If he actually cared about the team, he would have put this these negotiations aside knowing. He wanted to go and make one final hurrah. Great.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out. But you could have been remembered saying, listen, I don't want to keep playing here, but I want to make sure this team is set up for the future.
Yeah.
That is how you get remembered and put out a statement saying, I've loved my time here and I got traded away. I had to waive my no trade clause because this, and I recognize this is great for the city.
Yeah.
You want to get remembered as a hero, that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean when I say it's a lesson for agents and players to understand the market you're playing in going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's off to a pretty good start with Vegas. Good first half of the season. Vegas is doing all right. They're in a weaker division, so they don't really have to play the best hockey in the world.
They just have to lose in overtime.
Exactly. I mean, they are leading the Pacific right now, tied with the Oilers. But they only have 62 points, which is less than both wildcard teams in the East, which is just crazy the parity that we're seeing in the NHL this year. The West is so strong with three teams, and then the rest of it is kind of crap, and then the East is tight as I've ever seen it. Like, I've never seen the East this tight. But Toronto's right there, too. They're pushing. They're kind of knocking on the doorstep. They're 6 points out right now. They're kind of been going on a little bit of a run. They had a rough start, and like they're turning it around. Like, Matthews is starting to play a little bit better. Tavares has had a great season all throughout. But there's one player that I've been a little concerned about, and I was watching the Red Wings Leafs game, and you might know who it is, but it's Easton Cowan.
Cowboy.
Because Cowan made a, I don't want to say bonehead move, but it was a bonehead situation where he took the puck back out of the zone. And Mo Sider, who is a fantastic defenseman, but is also probably 6 inches taller than Easton Cowan and maybe 50 pounds heavier, easily bodied him off the puck, led to the breakaway goal by Dylan Larkin. And he's just not been amazing this year. And I think a lot of Leafs fans were expecting either him or Matty Nyes to kind of step up into that Marner position. Now, Cowan is still young. I got to give him that. But what are your thoughts on the way that Easton's been playing this year?
I watched the kid play when he was in the O.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the type of moves he was allowed to get away with.
Yeah.
It's the same way that if we saw, they want him to be a Marner so we can make a Marner comparison.
Right.
Because especially him coming from the London Knights, it's easy to make that comparison. The difference was he tried to make an OHL move, the same way Marner would try to go and put on the moves in his very first year. And I promise you, it didn't always work out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unfortunate that was the outcome. And I think it's going to be a really big learning curve for the kid to go and learn that you can't get away with that in the NHL, and you have to know when and where you're making these moves.
Yeah.
So I'm more of the mindset of he's got my support. I want him to keep getting those reps
because mm-hmm.
He's in his first year. Anyone saying like I've seen the rumors, oh, trade him away? No, are you kidding me? Do you not know how to invest in a prospect?
Yeah,
I'm the first person to say that the Leafs fans are they're a troubled bunch. I think they.
Yeah,
they just need a win every once in a while.
As a Montreal fan, my advice is to trust the process because it works out for you eventually. Because I think Toronto doesn't have the strongest prospect class because they've been so good over the past years. They didn't really get the highest draft picks. But Easton Cowan is a solid prospect that if he just gets the right amount of time to develop, he's going to be the future for your team or a great trade piece for another star of your team. You never know, right? Because I don't know where Toronto's at right now. They're an interesting team because they aren't really in a position to change too drastically. You got your star players like Matthews is locked up pretty long term. He's going to be a part of this team for a while. I can even see him re-signing again with Toronto.
I think he's locked up till 28, is he not?
28, yeah. I'm thinking short term here, like at least 3 years. Like he's got those, 3 more years. That's what I mean. You're giving Cowan 3 more years. Like Cowan in his fourth year could be a Marner level player, right? So then you're right back into it, and then you might be winning again. You might be closer to the cup than you were with Marner beforehand, right? So maybe Matthews does decide to stick around a little bit longer.
No, he won't.
Since there's no team in Arizona anymore, I'm just saying. So
He's not going to stick around, unfortunately, because McDavid's going to be signing because they both expire at the same time.
Oh, I see.
What we might see is that McDavid will actually come for Matthews last season, and that's how it's going to work out for the playoffs. But I think that's what's going
to
happen.
Oh, I forgot I was talking to a delusional Leafs fan.
Whoa. Semi-delusional. Okay. I have my bases.
Oof, that is a tough one. Tough one to say. And you have journalist integrity? Is that what it's called?
There's a reason why I report on what's happening and not what's going to happen.
Oh, okay. All right. I get it.
I can tell you what happened.
Yeah.
I can tell you the history.
Yeah, but you can't.
I can't tell you what's going to happen.
Okay. All right. McDavid, I haven't heard those rumors since the offseason. So, I mean, it's nice.
Since
nice
he
refreshing. Yeah, since he re-signed. Yeah, yeah. But that's great that you got to go to that game. I'm sure a lot of people would have paid a lot of money to be there because that's a good game to be back for, especially since
Toronto's. Not if they knew the score.
Not if they knew the score, because we didn't even talk about that, but Vegas took the Leafs for a walk.
Stolarz should not have been. So in case you missed it, Stolarz played his first game in net after being on injury. Did not play for the Marlies at all, although he got some reps in down there. You essentially sent a goalie that was cold into an offense that was coming out with bleeding passion because they're playing in Toronto against a booing crowd.
Mm-hmm.
That I know he can stand up to those sort of pressures.
Yeah,
but you got to recognize when it was a. I'd say a questionable move by Berube to go and have him start in there when Hildeby's been good and Wool has been pretty good. I would have loved to have seen Hildeby being left. And then that's me saying that loving Stolarz, yeah. But that's just essentially what led to the downfall of Toronto in that matchup with the first, I think, two of the first 10 shots.
It happens, yeah. No. But Berube took a pretty big hit to the head, it looks like. I don't know
what happened, yeah, man.
Apparently got hurt in the gym or something. I don't know what he was doing in the gym to do that. Who knows? Maybe Marner threw something at him after the game or something. I guess we'll never know.
That'd be interesting. Just release the video, man.
Yeah, no, for real. Did you get a chance to watch the AFC and NFC championship games?
I did.
Yeah, what did you think? Two very different games. I mean, AFC championship game, Patriots-Broncos. Very low scoring, snow blizzard at the end of the game.
Instant classic.
Yeah, I think the NFC game was a lot better, if I'm being completely honest. Mainly because I'm a salty Bills fan, and I know Buffalo would have walked the Patriots in that game, especially if the winner. Yeah, no. It does hurt to see the Patriots going back to the Super Bowl so quickly. I don't think they've been bad long enough. I feel like they need to have at least 10 years of bad football before they can make a return, but
it's impressive. You got to give them that. Impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it is impressive, and not knocking the players or anything. It's just the Patriots, and a team has given me a lot of bad memories. So it is hard, but nope, they are a great team.
Go Drake May. I'm not saying go Patriots. I'm saying go Drake May. I'm a Drake May supporter.
That's okay. We'll let that slide.
We haven't disagreed on sports before.
No, that's a fair point. I think Drake is he hasn't really done anything wrong. There's nothing he's done to make me dislike him. I just think he's a little overrated by the media and by, yeah, I guess the media. I personally
say the same thing about Josh Allen.
You absolutely can. I mean, he had four turnovers in the divisional game. That is pretty poor play.
Yeah.
But no, May's played when it matters and won when it matters. So I expect the Super Bowl to be awesome, but the NFC game, Seattle, LA, fantantastic game.
Boom, boom, like just constant entertainment.
Man, it was, so my one housemate is a Seattle fan and he was like freaking out the whole game. Like it was on the edge of his seat the whole time and I was right there with him. I'm like, this is nuts game. But I was really happy Seattle was able to pull through because it's a good Super Bowl matchup. Seattle, New England, like we saw this a couple years ago. I mean, that was an iconic Super Bowl. So, I mean, maybe we'll get another crazy moment. Personally, I think Seattle's the favorite. Like, they got this in the bag. Like, I, in my opinion, I think that defense is formidable. I don't think New England's got the offense to beat that defense when Seattle's offense is also so solid.
They're also playing in their own time zone.
They are. And San Francisco, too. So it is a warm game. Both teams are kind of come from colder climates, but you're right, they are in their time zone. But it'll be an interesting game, as always. But this is probably one of the most anticipated Super Bowls for me personally, just because of the two teams that are involved. I mean, Sam Darnold, what a story. A guy that, has been kicked around and given up on, and even had a great season last year with Minnesota, and then Minnesota didn't want to keep him, so he goes to Seattle, and now he's in the Super Bowl. Can't write much better scripts than that. But no, it's a good matchup. I'm just happy it's not the Chiefs or the Eagles again, because that was getting old. But yeah, no, Zayden, your thoughts on the games, your predictions, literally anything.
I was thoroughly entertained by both games. Yes, the Broncos Patriots game was low scoring, but I enjoy the fact that it was a weather game, because as more and more NFL teams go to having a dome and having indoor games, I'm just happy that I was able to go and watch a classic where a championship game was just completely snowed out, and you can see how much the weather conditions played a role in that.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to this Super Bowl. I think the Patriots getting to the Super Bowl is okay. It was too fast, and I think that Seattle's going to be a rude awakening. As much as I love Drake May, I think that the storyline for Seattle and what they're able to do is just so incredibly impressive. And I think that they got this, and it's their game to lose, and it's the Patriots coming back to say, we're still here, we're still contenders.
Absolutely.
So it's a good storyline that I'm looking forward to watching.
Yeah, I feel like if New England loses, they will definitely be back. They will be a legitimate team. Same with Seattle, honestly. I could see both of these teams putting up a repeat next year. It's gonna be a fun Super Bowl to watch.
The Pats have a lot of draft picks.
Yeah.
They were expecting to still be bad, and they have draft picks in the bank going forward. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's always a good feeling when your team is a little ahead of the rebuild process. So, no, very, very exciting Super Bowl. And Bad Bunny is the halftime performer. I'm pretty excited for Bad Bunny. I like to get my my Hispanic music down sometimes. So
me too, believe it or not.
I think it will be really, really fun. San
Green
Fran,
Day.
Too. Oh, yeah, Green Day's doing
the opening.
The opening, yeah.
They're not an outspoken group at all, Adam.
No, they're going to be very quiet and definitely keep their political opinions to themselves when they're up on stage.
Of course.
Yeah, I wonder if the president will be in attendance.
Or he really said no.
Oh, he did?
Declined it because of the entertainment.
Oh, good. I mean, it is in California, right? So I feel like Governor Newsom would have something to say about that. But yeah, no, the Super Bowl is going to be a great one. Instant classic. I will definitely be tuning in. But yeah, no, we can talk a little bit about the Olympics coming up, because we got Kyle and Sam's opinions on the Olympic teams. But Zayden, I'm sure you've paid attention to who was chosen and who was not chosen for Canada and the U.S. for the most part. I feel like those are the closest ones to us, so most focused on. But anyone on Canada that you thought you were a little surprised to see?
Mitch Marner.
Fair enough.
I'm kidding. Yeah. Of course. You know, Mitch Marner is great, especially on the international stage. He does play well.
Yeah,
he plays well because I don't think he has to deal with a lot of that. There's a lot of pressure, but I think that's a different type of pressure where he knows that it's everyone pushing him forward rather than yelling at him.
Yeah.
I think he cares a lot, and that could be a blessing and a curse. No, I'm pretty happy with the Team Canada roster. I don't have too much to critique because at that point you have a chessboard and every player serves a function, and it's just a matter of figuring out which way to make that function work. And there's multiple ways, multiple players that could, and there's multiple players that deserve to be there. Well, the players that are already on the team still deserve to be there.
Absolutely.
It's a tough pool to deal with.
I mean, you've got the best hockey players in the world. It's tough to choose the top 23, right? So, that's going to be super cool. A lot of controversy around the ice conditions, though, in Italy. So it's going to be, it's going to be really interesting to see how they figure that out. Apparently the neutral zone's super short, and Connor McDavid's going to fly through that in 2 seconds or something like that. I saw some meme about that, but I think it's going to be a fun Olympics. I've wanted NHL players in the Olympics ever since they left. So it's going to be really cool to see. Again,
is it no contact?
No, it's contact. Okay, Yeah. No, there's hitting. The women's hockey international doesn't have contact.
Okay,
so
that's what it was.
That will be also interesting to watch. I feel like the women always play so hard at the Olympics because, that is like, that's real hockey.
The stage.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's so
stage.
Impressive to watch because, especially when you don't have that contact, they still know how to use their body and maneuver their body while knowing how to play the puck and the stick hand, and it's just great.
Yeah.
There isn't just the, okay, I see an obstacle, let me just body my way through it. No, you got to be a lot more technical, and it's incredibly impressive.
Absolutely.
But as far as ice goes, embarrassing. I'll be the first to just call it out and just be like, That is just downright embarrassing that you can't have that ready after this much time, and that you didn't go and start to consider alternatives for playing conditions. You can't go and it's not fair for a lot of these players.
Yeah, no. So we only have a minute to go, but Tara is here wanting to comment something before we.